The back door buzzer sounds behind me. Weird. All B&T guests have to sign in at the gatehouse. Back door is for deliveries, and Nan didn't say anything about more Stony Bay paraphernalia coming. I buzz the door open, and there is Mr. Garrett, a stack of 2x4s on his shoulder, so out of place I actually do a double take. He's wandered in from the wrong movie, all bronzed and full of energy against the pale ivory gate. His face breaks into a big smile at the sight of me.
"Samantha, Jace said you worked here, but we weren't sure of your hours. He'll be pleased."
My dinky insignia jacket and silly gold-crested suit are so lame, but Mr. Garrett doesn't appear to notice.
"This is just the first of the load," he tells me. "They tell you where they're supposed to go?"
"Lumber? No, I'm blank, which obviously shows."
"No worries. I'll give the building manager a ring before we get going carrying the rest."
I didn't know Garrett's Hardware even did lumber. I know nothing about the Garrett's business, and I feel shamed by this suddenly, like I should know. As he's calling, I peer over his shoulder down to the curb, where I can see Jace's distinctive form bent into the back of a faded green pickup truck. My pulse picks up. How is it that my world and the Garrett's had such sharp boundaries until this summer, and now they keep interlocking?
"Yep."
Mr. Garrett snaps the phone shut.
"They want it right here between the two pools. I guess they're building a tiki bar."
Right. A tiki bar will blend in great with the whole Henry VIII vibe going on at the B&T. Bring me a scorpion bowl, wench. I glance through the bushes in search of Tim, but see only a drift of cigarette smoke.
"Sam."
Jace balances a stack of wood on his shoulder, sweaty in the summer heat. He's wearing jeans and has a pair of thick work gloves on. The wood drops onto the pool deck with a clatter, and he comes right up for a kiss, salty warm. His gloves are rough on my arms, and he tastes like cinnamon gum. I pull back, suddenly very aware of Mr. Lennox's window overlooking the pool, and Tim not 20 feet away, and Nan, not to mention Mrs. Henderson tanning nearby. She's in the garden club with Mom. Jace stands back to survey me, raising his eyebrows slightly.
"You're an admiral now?"
This is not what I expect him to say. He touches the gold braid on the shoulders of my jacket.
"Big promotion from Breakfast Ahoy."
He smiles.
"Do I have to salute you?"
"Please don't." Jace bends in for another kiss. I stiffen. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Mrs. Henderson sit up, cell phone to her ear. Surely she hasn't got my mom on speed dial. The expression in Jace's eyes, it's surprise and a little hurt. He scans my face. "Sorry," I say. "Have to keep up appearances while in uniform." I flap my hand at him.
"Keep up appearances?"
"I mean, keep my eyes on the pool, not get distracted." "The management gets all uptight about fraternizing on the job," I say, gesturing toward Mr. Lennox's window. Shooting the lifeguard off-duty sign a puzzled glance, Jace falls back and nods. I cringe inwardly.
"Okay," he says slowly. "Is this acceptable, then?"
He ducks to give my forehead a chaste smack. Mr. Garrett calls,
"AJ, I need 4 hands for this one, and I've only got the 2.
I flush, but Jace just smiles at me and turns to help his dad. Maybe Mr. Garrett is used to Jace kissing girls in front of him. Maybe this is all easy and expected for both of them. Why is it so weird and hard for me? At this point, Mr. Lennox hurries out looking flustered. I brace myself.
"They didn't say when you are coming," he says. "Nothing but between 12:00 and 5:00.
I exhale, feeling silly.
"Bad time?"
Mr. Garrett asks, easing the latest stack of wood onto the last.
"I'd just like to have notice,"
Mr. Lennox protests.
"Did you see the sign at the gatehouse? All service people need to sign in with precise time of delivery and departure."
"We just pulled up to the curb. I've delivered here before. I didn't think it would be a problem."
"It's club protocol."
Mr. Lennox's tone is urgent.
"I'll sign on the way out,"
Mr. Garrett says.
"Do you want the rest in a pile here? When does construction start?"
Apparently another sore point for the flustered Mr. Lennox.
"They haven't told me that either."
"Don't worry about it,"
Mr. Garrett tells him.
"We've got a tarp to leave in case it takes a while and there's rain."
He and Jace go back and forth to the truck, alternately carrying single loads and hauling them together, a team. Mr. Lennox hovers, possibly needing CPR soon.
"That's the lot," Mr. Garrett says finally. "I just need this signed."
He holds out a clipboard to Mr. Lennox, then stands back, clenching and unclenching his left hand, wincing. I glance over at Jace. He's stripped off the gloves and is wiping his brow. Though it's cloudy, the temperature's over 80, and it's humid as usual. "Can I get you guys something to drink?" I ask.
"It's okay, we've got a thermos in the car. Restroom, though?"
Jace tips his head at me.
"Or do I have to sign in for that one at the gatehouse?"
I don't say anything to this, just direct him to the bathroom, and then stand there uncertainly. Mr. Garrett bends to the pool, dips his hands, and tosses water on his face, running it through his wavy brown hair, so much like his son's. Though Mr. Lennox has faded away muttering, I feel apologetic. "Sorry about..." I gesture toward the club. Mr. Garrett laughs.
"You're certainly not responsible if they love their rules, Samantha. I've dealt with these guys before. Nothing new."
Jace returns from the bathroom, smiling.
"They're like griffins overlooking the stalls in there."
He jerks his thumb over his shoulder.
"Take a second,"
Mr. Garrett tells Jace, clapping him on the shoulder. "I have to do some more paperwork in the car."
"Thanks, Dad,"
Jace murmurs before turning to me. "So, will I see you tonight?" I ask.
"Absolutely. When do you get off work?"
I forgot. Not till later. Tonight's Thursday, so Dad's training me again. At the beach." "At the beach for football? How does that work?"
"He's got me doing his old workout. He had Division II colleges looking at him until he blew out his knee, so I need to bulk up. It means running in the water knee-deep, and that's still a killer for me." "Jason, all set?"
Mr. Garrett calls.
"Coming."
He drops his gloves to the ground, sliding his bare palms up my arms, then edging me into the shade of one of the bushes. I want to lean into him, but I'm still tense. Beyond his head, I see Tim, sorting coins in his hand, headed for the snack bar. He looks over at us, takes in the scene, smirks, then wags an index finger at us. Tisk, tisk.
"I'll respect the uniform and hold off on the fraternizing," Jace says, kissing my cheek. "But I'll see you tonight."
"Uniform free," I add, then clap my hand over my mouth. He grins, but says only,
"Works for me."
Chapter 16. Jace holds his hand against the window pane, bumping it only gently, but I'm so alert for the sound that I hear it, throw the window open, and climb out all in under 20 seconds. He indicates the blanket spread out on the roof. "Prepared," I comment, sliding down next to him. He reaches for me, slipping an arm around my neck.
I try to think ahead. Plus, I needed incentive to finish the last bit of training, so I thought about meeting you up here.
"I was incentive?"
"You were."
His arm is warm behind me. I curl my toes at the bottom of the blanket, brushing against the still warm roof tiles. It's nearly 9 o'clock, and the last bit of day is losing the battle against the dark. Another starry night. The stars are different around the world, did you know? If we were in Australia, we'd see a whole new sky.
"Not just backward?"
Jace pulls me closer, pillowing my head on his chest. I take a deep breath of warm skin and clean shirt.
"Or upside down? Completely different?"
"Mostly different," I tell him. "It's winter in Australia, so they see the Summer Cross and Orion's Belt. And this orangey-red star, Aldebaran, which is part of the Eye of Taurus. You know, the bull."
"So how is it exactly?"
he asks, tracing his finger idly around the collar of my shirt, a mesmerizing motion.
"That you became an astrophysicist?"
"Kind of a roundabout way." I close my eyes, breathe in the smell of cut grass, Mom's rose bushes, Jace's clean skin.
"Go on,"
he says, sliding the finger up my throat to follow the line of my jaw, then back down along the collar. I feel almost hypnotized by that simple motion and find myself telling a story I've never told. "You know how my dad left my mom before I was born?" He nods, his brow furrowing, but doesn't say anything. Well, I don't really know how it happened. She doesn't talk about it. Whether she kicked him out or he just left, or they had some big fight or what. But he left behind some stuff, in this big box that my mom was supposed to mail to him, I guess. But she was about to have me, and Trace was really little, too, only just over a year old, so she didn't send it. She just stuck it in the back of the front hall closet. I've always thought this was so unlike Mom, not to sweep up every bit. Tracy and I found the box when we were about 5 and 6. We thought it was a Christmas present or something. So we opened it all excited, but it was just full of random things, old T-shirts with band names on them, cassette tapes, pictures of these big gatherings of people we didn't know, sports gear, one sneaker, stuff. Not what we were hoping for once we realized what it was.
What were you hoping for?
Jace's voice is quiet. Treasure. Old diaries or something. His Barbie collection.
Your dad collected Barbies?
I laugh. Not that I know of, but we were little girls. We would have preferred that to some smelly shoes and old R.E.M. and Blind Melon t-shirts.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now Jace's finger has edged down my shorts, tracing the same slow line along the waistband. I take a hard-to-catch breath. Anyway, at the very bottom there was this telescope, a fancy one but still all wrapped up, like he'd gotten it but never opened it, or someone had given it to him and he didn't want it. So I took it and hid it in my closet.
Then you used it on the roof?
Jace shifts, propping himself up on an elbow now, looking at my face. Not on the roof, just from my window. I couldn't figure out the directions for a few years. But after that, yeah, I used it. Looking for aliens, finding the Big Dipper, that kind of thing. I shrug.
Wondering where your dad was at all?
Oh, maybe. Probably, at first. After that, I just got hooked by the idea of all those planets far away. All those other stories. Jace nods as though this makes sense to him. I find myself feeling a little shaky. Now it's your turn.
Hmm?
He circles my belly button with that light finger.
Oh my God.
Tell me a story. I turn my head, bury my lips in the worn cotton of his shirt. Tell me things I don't know. So, with nothing to be distracted by, no brothers and sisters bursting in, no crowd of friends, no awkward on-the-job moment, just me and Jace, I learn things about the Garretts I couldn't by watching. I learn that Alice is in nursing school. Jace raises his eyebrows at me when I laugh at this.
What, you don't see my big sister as a ministering angel? I'm shocked.
Duff's allergic to strawberries. Andy was born 2 months early. All the Garretts are musical. Jace plays the guitar, Alice the piccolo, Duff the cello, Andy the violin. And Joel? I ask.
Oh, the drums, of course, Jace says. It was the clarinet, but then he realized that was just not a turn-on.
The soft air smells sweet and leafy. Feeling the slow beat of Jace's heart beneath my cheek, I close my eyes and relax. How was the training?
I'm a little sore, Jace admits, but Dad knows what he's doing. It worked for Joel, anyway. He got a full ride at State U for football.
So where are you applying to college? Do you know yet? Jace, who's again leaning on one elbow, lies back, rubbing the side of his nose with his thumb. His face, usually so alight and open, clouds.
I don't know. Not sure I can apply.
What? He tunnels his fingers through his hair.
My parents, my dad, they've always been really good about debt. But then last year, that new Lowe's started digging around. Dad figured it would be a good time to take a loan and lay in inventory. Specialty items. Things Lowe's wouldn't have. But, people aren't building. The store's barely breaking even. It's tight. Alice has a partial and some money from my great-aunt Alice. She's got a private-duty nurse's aide job this summer, too. But the football thing may work out. But I'm not my brother.
I twist to face him. There's got to be something, Jace. Some other kind of scholarship, student loan. There's something out there, I'm sure. I think of Mrs. Garrett trying to limit how much juice the kids pour. Duff, you'll never drink that whole glass. Pour a little, then refill if you're really thirsty.
Then of Mom, who makes gourmet dishes on a whim after watching the Food Network, food she won't be home long enough to eat, and that Tracy and now just me will never be able to finish.
There's a way, Jace. We'll find it.
He shrugs, looking slightly less bleak as his eyes rest on me.
Sailor Supergirl to my rescue now.
I salute him. At your service.
Yeah?
He leans over, ducking his head so our noses touch.
Could I get a list of those services?
I'll show you mine, I breathe. If.
Deal,
Jace murmurs. Then his mouth shifts to mine, warm and sure as his hands pull me close. Later he leans up one last time to kiss me as he descends the trellis, then waits while I fold the blanket and toss it down to him. Good night.
Good night,
I whisper, then hear Mom's voice behind me.
Sweetheart?
Oh, God. I leap back in through the window, so fast I smack the top of my forehead on the frame.
Ow! Were you talking to someone out there?
Mom, looking chic in a sleeveless black shirt and fitted white pants, has her arms folded, frowning.
I thought I heard voices.
I try to keep the flush from flooding my face, unsuccessfully. I'm blushing and my lips are swollen. I could not possibly look more guilty.
Just calling hello to Mrs. Schmidt across the street, I say. She was getting her mail.
Incredibly, Mom buys this. She's already distracted.
I've told you 100 times not to leave that window open. It lets out the central air and it lets in the bugs.
She slams the window shut, flipping the lock, then looking out. I pray she won't see the incriminating figure of Jace heading home with, God, a blanket. Not that Mom would necessarily put 2 and 2 together, but that was so close, and she's not stupid, and I feel as though my heart might pound its way out of my chest.
Why don't those people ever put away the clutter in their yard?
She mutters to herself, pulling down the shade.
Was there something you wanted, Mommy?
I ask, then grimace. I haven't called her Mommy for at least 6 years. But the word seems to take the edge off, and she comes over to brush my hair from my face, almost as Jace did, except that she pulls it back, gathering it into a ponytail, then shifts to study the effect, giving me that smile that reaches her eyes.
Yes, I need your help, Samantha. I have a few events tomorrow, and I'm stuck. Come help me, we can have tea.
A few minutes later, my adrenaline levels gradually easing back to normal, I sip chamomile tea, watching Mom spread linen pantsuits and summer sweaters on her bed. You'd think this would be Tracy's job. She's the one who thinks in terms of outfits and lays out her clothes the night before, but for some reason it's always been mine.
Here's what I have, Mom says. It's a luncheon at the garden club, then I need to go to a 100th birthday party, and straight from there to a harbor cruise.
Snuggling back against the satin bolster, I narrow the choices down to basic black dress, casual white linen suit, blue-flowered skirt with cornflower-colored wrap. The black, I tell her, goes with everything. Her forehead creases, and she scoops up the hanger, draping the black over her body, turning to look in the cheval mirror.
My mother always told me not to wear all black. Too stark and kind of cliched.
Before I can ask why she bought it then, she brightens.
But I have the same thing in navy blue.
I pronounce that dress perfect, and it is. Mom vanishes into her walk-in closet to pull out a selection of shoes. I burrow deeper into the pillows. Though she's hardly taller than me, her bed is a California king, one of those outsized deals made for the L.A. Lakers or whatever. I feel always like a little kid when I'm here. After we sort through the shoes, discarding the wicked highs and torturous Manolos and the practical but ugly naturalizers, Mom sits down on the bed, reaching for her tea. Her shoulders rise and fall with an indrawn breath.
This is relaxing.
She smiles at me. It feels as though we haven't done this in a long time. It feels like that because it is like that. Our tea ritual, choosing clothes, Mom being home at night. Hard to remember the last time all that came together.
Tracy emailed me the cutest picture of Flip and her at the East Chop Lighthouse. I got it too, I say. They're a very sweet couple. Mom sips her tea. Sweet would not be the first word I'd use to describe Tracy and Flip, but I've walked in on them at inopportune moments that Mom, against all odds, has never encountered. What if she'd come to my room 5 minutes, 2 minutes sooner? The open window would have told her where I was. What would I have said? What would Jace have done? Do you miss having a boyfriend, sweetheart? This catches me totally off guard. She stands up, scooping up the rejected outfits and heading for the closet to rehang them. I say nothing. I know that's important at your age. She laughs ruefully. Maybe at my age, too. I'd forgotten. She goes far away for a moment, then seems to catch herself, returning to the subject at hand. What about Thorpe, Samantha? Flip's younger brother. He's such a nice boy. She's suggesting dates for me now? This is new and bizarre behavior for Mom. Thorpe plays for the other team, I tell her. Well, I hardly think his sports allegiances matter, she says. He's always had lovely manners. He's been out of the closet since middle school, Mom. She blinks rapidly, absorbing this. Oh. Well, then. Her cell phone rings, loud in the quiet air. Hi, honey. Mom tucks the phone to her shoulder, fluffing her hair, even though Clay's not present. When? Okay, I'll turn it on right now. Call you back after. She reaches for the clicker, neatly contained in a wicker basket on her bedside table. Channel 7 covered my speech at the Tapping Reef House. Tell me what you think, Samantha. I wonder if the children of movie stars get this weird sense of disconnect I have now. The person on screen looks like the woman who makes lemonade in our kitchen, but the words coming out of her mouth are alien. She's never had a problem with immigrants before, or gay marriage. She's always been conservative in a moderate way. I listen to her. I look at her excited face next to me, and I don't know what to say. Is this Clay? Whatever it is, it makes me squirm. Chapter 17. When Mom isn't out campaigning, busier than ever, Clay's at our house. This takes getting used to. As I saw from the start, Clay's different. He spreads himself out, taking off his tie and tossing his jacket down on the sofa, kicking his shoes any which way, thinking nothing of opening the refrigerator, taking out leftovers and eating them straight from the Tupperware. Things Mom would never allow Tracy or me to do. But Clay gets a free pass. I walk into the kitchen some mornings to find him cooking breakfast for Mom, mysterious breakfasts full of things she's never eaten, like grits and home fries. While Mom studies the schedule of the day, Clay fills up her coffee cup, her plate, planting a kiss on her head as he does so. The morning after we choose clothes, he's in the kitchen in an apron when I come downstairs.
Your mama's just gone out to get the paper, Samantha. Would you like some biscuits with sausage gravy?
Yuck, no. He is wielding the frying pan with the same easy confidence he seems to bring to everything. It's odd to have a man feeling comfortable in our house. Then I realize this is the first time I've seen him alone since I ran into him on Main Street. It's my chance to ask him what's up with that woman, but I have no idea how to begin.
Here, try this, he says, setting a plate in front of me.
It looks like someone's thrown up on a biscuit, but it actually smells really good.
Come on, he says. Don't be one of those girls who's afraid to put a little meat on her bones.
His hair is flopping boyishly on his forehead, and his eyes smile. I want to like him. He makes Mom so happy. And he did stand up for me about curfew. I shift uncomfortably. Thanks, by the way, for helping me out the other night, I finally say, poking at the lumpy gravy with my fork. Clay chuckles.
I was young once too, honey.
You still are, I think, wondering suddenly if he's closer to my own age than Mom's.
Come on, Samantha, you're no coward. Take a bite.
All right, I think. I won't be a coward. I look him in the eyes. So who was that woman I saw you with? I expect him to tell me it's none of my business, or say he has no clue what I'm talking about, but he doesn't miss a beat.
Downtown? Have you been fussing about that?
I shrug. I've been wondering if I should say something to my mom. He plants his hands on the counter, looking me in the eye.
Because you saw me having lunch with an old friend?
The air has shifted a little. He's smiling, but I'm not sure he means it now. You did seem pretty friendly, I say. Clay studies me, still leaning casually against the counter. I meet his eyes. After a moment, he suddenly seems to relax.
She's just a pal, Samantha. She was a girlfriend a while back, but that's history. I'm with your mama now.
I make little indentations in the gravy with my fork. So Mom knows about her?
We haven't sat down and talked about our pasts much. Too much going on right here and now. But your mama has no call to be concerned about Marcy, any more than I would fret about your daddy.
Want some O.J.? He pours me a glass before I can answer.
We're grown-ups, sugar. We all have pasts. I bet even you do. But those don't much matter compared to the present, right?
Well, right, I guess. I mean, I can barely remember what I saw in Michael or Charlie.
We all have presents, too, he adds, that we don't tell even the people we love every little thing about.
I look at him sharply. But no, that's crazy. He's here even less often than Mom. He couldn't possibly know about Jace. But wait, does that mean...
Like I said, Marcy's the past. She's not my present, Samantha. And you know me well enough to know I'm a heck of a lot more concerned with the future than the past.
I'm polishing off the surprisingly good biscuit when Mom comes in, flushed from the heat, with a large stack of newspapers. Clay scoops them out of her hands, gives her a big kiss, pulls out a stool for her.
I've been working on making a southerner out of your daughter, Gracie. Hope you've got no objection to that.
Of course not, sweetie. She slides onto the stool next to me. That looks delicious. I'm famished. Clay gives her two biscuits and ladles on the gravy, and Mom tucks into it like a lumberjack. So much for her usual breakfast of cantaloupe and rye toast. And so it goes. He's in our lives, in our house, everywhere now. That feels like the last I see of Mom for a while. She dashes out the door every morning with her change of clothes for the evening, hanging off the backseat hook in her car. The longest conversations I have with her are by text, as she lets me know she's at a cookout, clam broil, ribbon cutting, fundraising harbor cruise, union meeting, whatever. She even falls behind on vacuuming, leaving post-it notes directing me to pick up the slack. When she is home for dinner, Clay is there too, and halfway into the meal he shoves aside his plate, pulling out a pad to scribble notes on, absently reaching for his fork from time to time, fishing a piece of meat or a bite of tomato off whatever plate he lands on, his own, mine, Mom's. You hear that phrase, he lives and breathes, about other people's enthusiasms, but I've never seen it in action quite like this. Clay Tucker lives and breathes politics. He makes Mom with her relentless schedule seem like a casual dabbler. He's turning her into someone new, someone like him. Maybe that's a good thing, but the fact is, I miss my mom.
Chapter 18.
Ms. Reed, Ms. Reed, could you please come here?
Mr. Lennox's voice slices through the air, practically vibrating with rage.
This instant!
I blow my whistle, put the lifeguard off duty sign on my chair after making sure there are no small kids without parents in the water, and head for the lagoon pool. Mr. Lennox is standing there with Tim. Once again, Mr. Lennox looks a few breaths from an apoplexy. Tim, amused and a little wasted, is squinting in the midday sun.
This,
Mr. Lennox points to me, is a lifeguard.
Oh, Tim says, I get it now.
No, you do not get it, young man. Do you call yourself a lifeguard? Is that what you call yourself?
Tim's expression is familiar, struggling to decide whether to be a smartass. Finally, he says,
My friends are allowed to call me Tim.
That is not what I mean.
Mr. Lennox whirls on me,
Do you know how many demerits this young man has accrued?
He's only worked at the B&T for a week, so I make a conservative guess. Five?
Eight!
I'm almost expecting Mr. Lennox to burst into a ball of flame.
8 demerits! You've worked here 2 summers. How many demerits do you have?
Tim folds his arms and looks at me. Fraternizing on the job is worth 4 demerits, but he's never said a word. To me, or apparently Nan, about seeing me and Jace. I'm not sure, I say. None.
None, Mr. Lennox says. In his brief stint on the job, this young man has,
he holds up one hand, bending down finger by finger,
taken food from the snack bar 2 times without paying, not worn his hat 3 times, allowed someone else to sit in the lifeguard chair.
It was just this little kid, Tim interjects. He wanted to see the view. He was like 4.
That chair is not a toy. You have also left your post without posting the off-duty or on-break sign 2 times.
I was right there by the pool, Tim objects. I was just talking to some girls. I would have stopped if someone was drowning. They weren't that hot.
He adds this last to me, as though he owes me an explanation for this unaccountable sense of responsibility.
You didn't even notice me when I stood behind you, clearing my throat. I cleared it 3 times.
Is not noticing the throat clearing a separate offense from not putting up that sign? Or is it 3 different demerits because of the 3 times? Because...
Mr. Lennox's face seems to contract and freeze. He straightens up as tall as a very short man can.
You,
finger jabbed at Tim's chest,
do not have the bath and tennis spirit.
He punctuates each word with another jab. Tim's lip twitches, another bad move.
Now,
Mr. Lennox thunders,
you do not have a job.
I hear a sigh from behind me and turn to find Nan. A week, she whispers. A new record, Timmy. Mr. Lennox turns on his heel, calling,
please return all items of your wardrobe that are club property to the office.
Ah, shit,
Tim says, reaching into the pocket of the hoodie draped over the lifeguard chair and pulling out a pack of Marlboros.
I was so hoping I'd get to keep that cute hat.
That's it? Nan's voice rises unexpectedly in both pitch and volume. That's all you have to say? This is the 4th job you've lost since you got kicked out of school. Your 3rd school in 3 years. Your 4th job in 3 months. How is it even possible to get fired that often?
Well, that movie theater gig was boring as all fuck, for one thing,
Tim offers, lighting up. Who cares? All you had to do was take tickets, Nan shouts. Tim's kept his voice low, but Mr. Lennox was loud, and Nan, who hates a scene, doesn't seem to care that she's making one now. A group of small kids are staring round-eyed. Mrs. Henderson has her cell phone out once again. And you screwed that up by letting everyone you know in for free.
They charge crazy-ass prices for popcorn and candy. The management was hardly losing money.
Nan puts her hands in her hair, sweat damp with either heat or frustration. Then the senior center. Giving joints out to senior citizens, Timmy? What was that? Mrs. Henderson has now moved in closer, under the pretext of heading toward the snack bar.
Hey, Nano, if my ass were in a wheelchair in a place like that, I'd only hope you'd show up with some weed. Those poor bastards needed their reality blurred. It was like a public service. They had them square dancing. They had fake American Idol contests. They had frickin' funny hat day. It was like torture the elderly fest.
You're such a goddamn loser, Nan, who never swears, says. It's not possible we're really related. Then a surprising thing happens. Hurt slices across Tim's face. He shuts his eyes, pops them open again to glare at her.
Sorry, sis. Same gene pool. I could resent you for swimming to the deep end with all the perfect genes, but since they make you so fucking miserable, I don't. You can have them.
Okay, stop it, you two, I say, the way I used to when they clashed as kids, rolling around on the grass, pinching, scratching, punching, no holds barred. It always scared me. afraid they'd really get hurt. Somehow, the potential seems so much bigger now that words are the weapons of choice.
"Samantha," Nan says, "let's get back to work. We need to do those jobs we still have."
"Right," Tim calls after her retreating back, "'cause then you can keep the great outfit. Priorities, right, Nano?"
He picks up his hat, puts it on the lifeguard chair, and stubs out his cigarette in it.
Chapter 19.
I've got a surprise.
Jace opens the door of the van for me a couple days later. I haven't seen Tim or Nan since the incident at the BNT, and I'm secretly glad for a break from the drama. I slide into the van, my sneakers crunching into a crumpled pile of magazines, an empty Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup, various Poland Spring and Gatorade bottles, and lots of unidentifiable snack wrappers. Alice and her bug are evidently still at work.
"A surprise for me?" I ask, intrigued.
"Well, it's for me, but you too, kind of. I mean, it's something I want you to see."
This sounds a little unnerving.
"Is it a body part?" I ask.
Jace rolls his eyes.
"No, geez, I hope I'd be smoother than that."
I laugh. "Okay, just checking. Show me." We drive to Maplewood, two towns over, more run down than Stony Bay. Jace pulls the van into a parking lot with a huge red, white, and blue sign that says, "French Bob's Used Cars."
"French Bob?"
Bob, unfortunately, thinks that adding French makes him sound classier.
"Got it. So you'd be French Jace?"
"Oui, oui. Come on, I want you to tell me what you think of her."
"Her?"
He takes my hand after we climb out of the car, pulling me into the back lot. There are lots and lots of extremely aged vehicles in various states of disrepair, with big white-painted lettering on their windshields. I peer at them, noticing that they all say things like, "A steal at $39.99, or "They don't make 'em like this anymore," or "Purrs like a tiger cub." We come to a stop in front of a grayish-white car with a huge hood and tiny cockpit. The windshield says, "This sweet baby could be yours for mere pennies."
"Mere pennies, meaning, of course, $1,500, Jace says. "But isn't she beautiful?"
I'm no car connoisseur, but his eyes are shining, so I say enthusiastically, "Gorgeous." He laughs at me.
"I know, not now, but she's a 73 Mustang. Picture her with paint instead of primer. Picture her with new seat covers and a leather steering wheel and..."
"Fuzzy dice?" I ask dubiously. "Candy apple red paint? Leopard print seat covers?"
Jace shakes his head.
"Just who do you think I am today, Samantha? No way. British racing green, of course, and no dice. And before you ask, no dancing hula girl figurines either."
"In that case, I love it."
He grins.
"Good, because I know I can get her working again, and she's a convertible. And I just wanted to make sure you liked her, because... I just wanted to be sure you did."
He pats the hood, ducking his head slightly.
"I've been saving for this now for 4 years. I should put it toward college, I know," he says, as though expecting me to give him a lecture on fiscal responsibility. "But Alice, like, always has the bug these days. Apparently Brad is a lousy driver, and you and I can't have all our dates on your roof. Besides, this is such a deal."
My attention has been caught by one thing.
"You've been saving for a car since you were 13?
"What, you think that's weird?"
His smile's so infectious that I'm returning it before I even begin to answer.
"I don't know, I just thought 13-year-olds went for the Xbox first."
"Joel taught me to drive when I was 13, in the beach parking lot in the fall. I just got hooked. That's why I started learning how to fix things on cars, since I couldn't legally drive them yet. You still think I'm nuts, huh? I can tell."
"In a good way," I assure him.
"I can live with that. Now come on, ma chérie, and let's pay French Bob."
Bob agrees to have the Mustang towed to the Garrett's house by Friday. As we climb back into the van, I ask, "Where are you going to work on her?" Already I, too, am referring to this car as if it has a gender.
"I'll just do it in the driveway. Joel takes the cycle to work these days, so that space will be clear. Besides, there's no room in the garage until my mom has that yard sale she's been talking about
for 5 years. I can already see my mother, hands on hips, glaring through the window at the disabled car and huffing out an impatient breath. A rusty old wreck now. What next, plastic flamingos? I squeeze Jace's knee, and he instantly covers my fingers with his own, giving me his slow, intoxicating smile. I feel a pang, as though I'm handing over a part of myself I've never offered before. And I suddenly remember Tracy, worrying about getting in too deep with Flip. It's only been a few weeks, and somehow I seem to have gotten far from shore. Jace's schedule is as busy as Mom's. The hardware store, training, some odd jobs fixing things at the bike shop, delivering lumber. One afternoon after lifeguarding, I'm hesitating on our porch, wondering about calling him, when I hear a whistle and he's walking up our driveway. He gives my jacket with its epaulets and stupid crested suit the once-over. I've been so eager to get out of the BNT that I hadn't bothered to change.
Admiral Samantha once again.
I know, I say. Lucky you, getting to wear anything you want. I wave my hand at his faded shorts and his untucked forest green Oxford shirt.
But you still look better than me. When does your mom get home today?
Late. She's at some fundraiser at the Bay Harbor Grill. I roll my eyes.
Want to come to my house? You allowed to fraternize off-site?
I tell him to wait 2 minutes while I ditch the uniform. When we get to the Garretts, it is, as usual, a hive of activity. Mrs. Garrett's breastfeeding Patsy at the kitchen table, quizzing Harry on the names of various rope knots for sailing camp. Duff's on the computer. George, shirtless, is eating chocolate chip cookies, dreamily dipping them in milk and leafing through National Geographic Kids. Alice and Andy are in an intense discussion over by the sink.
How do I get him to do it? It's just killing me. I'm gonna die.
Andy scrunches her eyes shut.
What are you dying of, dear? Mrs. Garrett asks. I missed it. Kyle Comstock still hasn't kissed me. It's killing me.
It shouldn't take this long, Alice observes. Maybe he's gay.
Alice, Jace objects. He's 14, Jesus.
What's gay?
George asks, his mouth full of cookie.
Gay is like those penguins we read about at Central Park Zoo,
explains Duff, still typing away on the computer.
Remember, sometimes the boy ones mate with other boy ones.
Oh, I remember.
What's mate? I forget that part,
responds George, still chewing. Try this one, Alice suggests. She walks up to Jace, shakes back her hair, casts her eyes down, walks her fingers up his chest, and then toys with the buttons of his shirt, swaying slightly toward him. That one always works.
Not on your brother.
Jace backs up, rebuttoning.
I guess I could try that. Andy sounds doubtful. But what if he sticks his tongue in my mouth right away? I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Ew, squeals Harry. Barf, that's rank.
Feeling my face warm, I shift my eyes to Jace. He's blushing too, but he quirks a little smile at me. Mrs. Garrett sighs.
I think you should just take this at a slow pace, Andy. Does it feel really gross or nice?
Andy turns to me. It's so hard to imagine, even though I do try all the time.
Samantha and I are going upstairs to, feed the animals.
Jace grabs my hand. Is that what they call it now? Asks Alice languidly.
Alice,
Mrs. Garrett begins as we hurry upstairs to the relative quiet of Jace's room.
Sorry, he says, the tips of his ears still pink.
No problem. I pull the elastic out of my hair, toss it back, flutter my eyelashes, and, reaching out, walk my fingers dramatically up his chest to unbutton his shirt.
Oh my God, Jace whispers. It's like I've just gotta... I can't help myself, I...
He hooks his index finger into the waistband of my shorts, moving me closer. His lips descend on mine, familiar now, but more and more exciting. In the past few weeks, we've spent hours kissing. But only kissing, only touching each other's faces and backs and waists. Jace, who takes his time, not like Charlie, who was incapable of meeting my lips without reaching for more, or Michael, whose patented move was to thrust his hands up under my shirt, unclasp my bra, then groan and say, "Why do you do this to me?" Now it's my hands that slide up under Jace's shirt, up his chest, while I lower my head to his shoulder and breathe in deeply. All our other kisses have been slow and careful, by the lake, on the roof, potentially not so alone. Now we're in his bedroom, and that feels both tempting and wicked. I move my hands to the hem of his shirt, tugging up, while part of me is completely shocked that I'm doing this. Jace steps backward, looks at me, intent green eyes. Then he raises his arms so I can slip the shirt off. I do. I've seen him without a shirt. I've seen him in a bathing suit. But the only times I got to touch his chest, it was dark. Now the afternoon sun slants into the room, which smells earthy and warm with all the plants, except quiet for our breathing.
Samantha.
I say, trailing my hand over his stomach, feeling the firm muscles tighten. His hand reaches out. I close my eyes, thinking how embarrassed I'll be if he stops me. Instead, his fingers close lightly on the hem of my shirt, sliding it up, while the other hand curves around my waist, then moves, touching my cheek, asking a silent question. I nod, and he eases the shirt entirely off. Then he pulls me close and we're kissing again, which feels much more intimate when so much of his skin is touching mine. I can feel the thud of his heartbeat and the rise and fall of his breathing. I bury my hands in the waves of his curls and press closer. The door opens, and in comes George.
"Mommy said to bring these."
We move hastily apart to find him extending a plate of chocolate chip cookies, several of which have large bites out of them. George thrusts the plate at us guiltily.
"I had to make sure they were still good."
Then,
"Hey, you guys have nothing on top."
George?
Jace runs his hands through the hair at the back of his head.
"Me neither."
George jabs a finger at his own bare chest.
"We match."
"G-Man?"
Jace leads him to the door, handing him three cookies.
"Buddy, go back downstairs."
He gives his brother a little shove between his skinny shoulder blades, then shuts the door firmly behind him. "What are the chances he won't mention the no-shirt thing to your mom?" I ask.
"Slim."
Jace leans back against the door, closing his eyes. George tells all. I hastily tug on mine, yanking my arms into the sleeves.
"Let's just,
Assured Jace is at a loss. "Feed the animals?" I suggest.
"Right, yeah. Here."
He crosses to some low drawers under his bed. I have it all separated by. We sort food and dump out water bottles, refilling them, edge straw into cages. After about 5 minutes, I say, "Put this back on now." I thrust his shirt at him.
"Okay, why?"
"Just do it."
"Unbelievably distracted by my body, Samantha?"
"Yes." He laughs.
"Good, we're on the same page then."
There's a pause, then he says,
"I said that wrong, like it was all about how you look. And that's not it. It's just that you're so different than I thought you were."
"Then you thought I was when?"
"When I saw you, sitting on your roof, for years."
"You saw me for years?" I feel myself flush again. "You didn't tell me that."
"For years? Of course I didn't tell you. I knew you watched us. Couldn't figure out why you didn't just come over. I thought maybe you were shy, or a snob. I didn't know.
I didn't know you then, Sam."
"Couldn't help watching back, though."
"Because I'm so compelling and fascinating?" I roll my eyes.
"I used to see you out the kitchen window during dinner, or when I was swimming in the pool at night. Wonder what you were thinking. You always looked cool and poised and perfect, but that's..."
He trails off, ruffling his hair again.
"You're less, more... I like you better now."
"What do you mean?"
"I like you here. Real and just you and coping with all this insanity. George and Andy and Harry. Me, I guess. In that calm way you have. I like who you really are."
He regards me contemplatively for a long moment, then turns away, carefully fitting the water bottle into the ferret's cage. Underneath the flare of pleasure at his words, there's a niggling prickle of unease. Am I calm? Am I somebody who takes things in stride? Jace is so sure he sees me. A knock on the door. This time it's Duff wanting help with his sailing knot. Then Alice, who is having a CPR test tomorrow and needs a willing victim. No way, Jace says. Use Brad. I think it's good we have all these interruptions. Because right now, I don't feel the least bit calm, totally unsettled by what happened as we stood there, bare skin to bare skin, with this growing feeling that what happens between us is not on my schedule, in my control. Not me choosing to move away or back off or step apart, but a desire less easily managed. Before, I've always felt curious, not compelled. How much experience has Jace had? He's a fantastic kisser, but then he's good at everything he does, so that's no guide. The only girlfriend I know about is shoplifting Lindy, and she certainly seems as though she had no hesitation about taking what she wanted out of life. When Mrs. Garrett comes up to ask if I want to stay for dinner, I say no. My quiet, empty house with its leftovers in Tupperware, somehow, for the first time, a refuge from the steamy silence of Jace's room.
Chapter 20. Here you go, Grace. Senior Center Pig Roast. Daughters of St. Damien Shadfest. Sons of Almighty Michael Feast of the Blessed Shad. You need to go to all of these.
Clay has a highlighter in the local newspaper. Mom has a third cup of morning coffee.
Shad festivals? She says faintly. I've never done those before.
You never had a real opponent before, Grace. Yep, all of them. Look here, they're opening an old boxcar as a diner in Baycrest. You need to be there.
Mom takes a slow sip. Her hair is as untidy as it ever gets, a platinum tangle where her bun should be, as she tips her head back on the sofa. Clay skids the highlighter over a few more articles, then looks at Mom.
You're tuckered, he says. I know, but you got what it takes, Gracie, and you need to take that where it's meant to go.
Mom straightens up as though Clay's yanked on her strings. Now she walks over and sits next to him, examining the paper and tucking her hair behind her ears. The way she is around Clay makes me uneasy. Was she this way with Dad? There's balance between Tracy and Flip, I see that now, but Mom seems to be under a spell sometimes. I think of those moments in Jace's room. If Mom feels that way around Clay, it's not like I don't understand. But the shivers I feel around Jace are nothing like the prickle of anxiety I get now, watching their blonde heads duck closer together.
Was there something you needed, sugar?
Clay asks, noticing me hovering. I open my mouth, then shut it again. Maybe Tracy's right and I'm just not used to Mom having a man. Maybe, despite everything, I'm protective of my invisible father. Maybe I'm just hormonal. I look at the clock, an hour and a half till the B&T. I picture the cool water, sunlight on its surface, that calm underwater world, broken only by my even, steady strokes. I grab my gear and go.
Sailor Supergirl, you're on TV!
Harry hurtles himself at me as I come in the kitchen door.
It's you, right in the middle of Mammal Mysteries. Come see.
In the Garrett's living room, George, Duff, and Andy are sitting mesmerized in front of one of Mom's political commercials. Right now it's a shot of her face in front of the Capitol building. As women, as parents, we all know family comes first, she says, as the camera shows still photos of me and Tracy in matching dresses with our Easter egg baskets, on the beach, sitting on the lap of the B&T Santa Claus, all with Mom in the background. I don't think they'd ever snapped a picture of me with Santa without me crying, but I look relatively calm in this one. The B&T Santa always smelled like beer and had a drooping, palpably fake beard. My family has always been my focus.
Your mom's pretty, but she doesn't look like a mommy, George says.
That's a rude thing to say, Andy tells him as there's another montage of pictures. Tracy accepting a gymnastics award, me winning a prize at a science fair for my model of a cell. Oh, look, you had braces too, Samantha. I didn't think you'd have had to have those.
I just meant she looked fancy, George says, as Mom smiles and says,
When I was elected to be your state senator, I kept my focus. My family just got a lot bigger. Next are pictures of Mom standing with a crowd of high school students in caps and gowns, bending next to an old woman in a wheelchair, waving a flag, accepting flowers from a little boy.
Are those people really your family? Harry asks suspiciously. I've never seen any of them next door.
Now the camera pulls back to show Mom at a dinner table with a horde of ethnically diverse people, all smiling and nodding, evidently talking to her about their values and their lives over a banquet of popular Connecticut foods. I spy a clam bake, ingredients for New England boiled dinner, pizza from New Haven, things we've never had on our table.
To me, my constituents are my family. I will be honored to sit at your table. I will go to the table for you this November and beyond. I'm Grace Reed, and I approve this message.
Mom concludes firmly.
Are you okay, Sailor Supergirl? George pulls on my arm. You look sad. I didn't mean anything bad about your mommy.
I snap myself away from the screen to find him next to me, breathing heavily in that small boy way, holding out the battered stuffed dog, Happy.
If you're sad, he says, Happy's magic, so he helps.
I take the dog, then put my arms around George. More noisy breathing. Happy's mushed between us, smelling like peanut butter, Play-Doh, and dirt.
Come on, guys, it's a beautiful day, and you're indoors watching mammal mysteries. That's for rainy days.
I usher the Garretts outside, but not before flicking a glance back at the TV. Despite all the posters and leaflets, the newspaper photos, it's still surreal to see Mom on television. Even stranger to see myself, and how much I look like I belong right there with her. Chapter 21. Following Tim's B&T firing, the Masons, still researching scared straight boot camps, are trying to keep him busy. Tonight they've given him money to take me and Nan to the movies.
Please, Nan urges over the phone. It's a movie, how bad can that be? He won't even care, or even notice if we pick a chick flick.
But the moment I slide into the back seat of Tim's Jetta, I know this plan is not going to work. I should get out of the car, but I don't. I can't leave Nan in the lurch.
Tim, this isn't the way to the movies.
Nan leans forward in the passenger seat.
So right, sis. Screw showcase. This is the way to New Hampshire, and tax-free cases of Bacardi.
The speedometer edges past 75. Tim takes his eyes off the road to scroll through his iPod, or punch in the lighter, or fumble around in his shirt pocket for another Marlboro. I keep feeling the car drift, then lurch back into its lane as Tim yanks the wheel. I look at Nan's profile. Without turning, she reaches back a hand, grabbing on to mine. After about 20 minutes of speeding and weaving, Tim pulls over at a McDonald's, slamming the brakes so hard that Nan and I pitch forward and back. Still, I'm grateful. My fingers are stiff from clutching the door handle. Tim returns to the car, looking even less reliable, his pupils nearly overtaking his gray irises, his dark red hair sticking straight up in front. We have to get out of this, I whisper to Nan. You should drive.
I only have my learner's permit, Nan says. I could get in big trouble.
Hard to imagine how much bigger trouble could get. I, of course, can't drive at all, because Mom has put off my driver's ed classes time after time, claiming that I'm too young, and most of the drivers on the road are incompetent. It never really seemed like a battle worth fighting when I could catch rides with Tracy. Now I wish I'd forged Mom's name on the parental consent forms. I wonder if I could just figure it out. I think of those 6-year-olds you occasionally hear about in news stories who drive their stricken grandparent to the hospital. I check the front of the Jetta. It's a stick shift. There's no way. We need to think of something fast, Nanny.
I know, she murmurs back.
Leaning forward, she puts her hand on Tim's shoulder as he tries, unsuccessfully, to maneuver the key into the ignition.
Timmy, this doesn't make sense.
We're going to eat up all the tax-free savings and gas just getting to New Hampshire.
It's a fucking adventure, sis.
Tim finally gets the key in, presses the accelerator down to